This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
I'm Mark Packer. It's my partner, Wes Durham, and it's all about the Florida State Takeover Day. And, oh, yeah, some football news. We'll get into all that. But, Wes, what a crazy, wild afternoon we had yesterday. That was nuts.
Can I say that when we signed off here at 10 o'clock yesterday, we were at least, I wouldn't say we were fairly confident, but we thought we knew what was going to happen, right, at the ACC Board of Directors meeting yesterday. And that, you know, we might get a start date, but scheduling, nah, we, you know, full credit goes to Tony Barnhart of TMG. He's the one that told us back and said it on Sunday that the presidents could be given a schedule. And sure enough, they were given a schedule. I've heard, I don't know if you have or not, that it went from one way at noon to another way at 2 to another way at 4 o'clock. And if that's the case, then it's moving just as we always say, that it's fluid. You got to stay flexible. The target moves all the time. And guess what? It moved a lot yesterday to the point where we now have each ACC school scheduled to play 10 conference games, including the University of Notre Dame's inclusion, and a yet-to-be-determined non-conference game for each of the schools to complete a 2020 calendar of 11 games that is scheduled to start the week of September 7th through the 12th. And then potentially have an ACC game in Uptown Charlotte either December 19th. Go figure, brother.
When David Teal tweeted out yesterday at 4:24 p.m. Eastern Time, big news coming, and that's, I'm paraphrasing here a little bit. I was in the middle of a radio show, obviously, because we're live from 4 to 6 on SiriusXM, and I even said at 4:15, that is your, because I did the first 15 minutes of the show, it's all about the news of the day, and I said, you know, there's no scheduled reports coming from the ACC, but you, hey, it's 2020, anything can happen, but as of 4:15 p.m., that is the latest. By the time we went to break at 4:30, we were breaking down the ACC football schedule for 2020. And while that was news breaking, really, Wes, I thought the biggest news of the day yesterday was the fact that Notre Dame, who's been playing football since 1887, is now a conference member in football for 1 year. And my tip of the hat to Roddy Jones, who on this show, what, a week ago, week 10 days ago when it was, mentioned, thought about, hey, Pat, can you imagine, Wes, Notre Dame being in the league? I'm thinking, man, get out of here with that nonsense. They're not going to let some team who's not a member in this league play for the ACC football championship. And that started a firestorm of multiple debates on multiple shows down the road. But Roddy Jones had it in his bones, man. So I apologize to Roddy. I said he was out of his mind if he thought Notre Dame's going to be playing for an ACC football championship. Because I said, they're not joining the league. You crazy? Well, they're in the league, at least for 1 year in football. And to me, that was the really big story yesterday. Not only the timing was obviously important because none of us expected a schedule yesterday. And you mentioned how it went back and forth. And, you know, there's some reports that the SEC's ADs had their meeting and had kind of agreed that, hey, we're going to play a 10-game conference-only schedule. And when that word got out, there's some folks that are going, man, the ACC got wind of that and said, hey, we see that and we'll match you with the plus one. I mean, there's a lot of gamesmanship going on here. And it was, as Pat Forty and Sports Illustrated said, it was an incredibly shrewd move by the ACC and John Swofford. And that would be an understatement because the league got in front of the parade yesterday while the SEC and the Big 12 now try to figure out what they're going to do. But they've really kind of put the SEC, they're back to the corner and said, hey, listen, we're going to play 10 conference games and that plus one, that would be a non-conference game that's got to be played in your home state. So tag, you're it, SEC. You know what? You love to brag about your football, and it's out of sight. But the ACC kind of put everybody on notice with that announcement yesterday.
Well, the storyline and the headline is Notre Dame joining the ACC for the 2020 campaign. Beyond that, we don't know. But here's what we do know today about Notre Dame's inclusion. Not only were the Irish scheduled to play 6 games against ACC teams, they've added 4 more to complete the rotation. Notre Dame has also agreed to share the NBC money. That's the money they have, an estimated $15 million a year from the National Broadcasting Company for their football package. That will now go into the television revenue pool for football in the ACC to be divided 15 ways. Why is that important? Because Notre Dame's going to make more money from their television contract now with the inclusion of the other ACC schools than they have before on just the NBC deal. Here's the layout of the schedule. You see they keep the games that were scheduled for home, Clemson, Duke, and Louisville notably. They add Boston College on the road. Georgia Tech was scheduled at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Wake Forest was scheduled in Uptown Charlotte. We have no idea. I did not see any news on whether those games would be still held in those facilities in Charlotte and Atlanta, respectively, or if they would move to the campuses. I think that's still to be determined. You saw Boston College. The trip to Chapel Hill is going to be an interesting one when you think about the potential of Ian Book and Sam Howell matching wits as well. So there's the Irish schedule of ACC opponents and the non-conference opponent to be determined. And the note, they are eligible for the ACC championship game. And a quick word about the championship game. And it's going to be mentioned a lot here in the next week or so. There are a lot of people who have speculated about the viability of divisions for football in the ACC for several years. Last couple of years, it's become a little bit more of a topic based on Clemson's dominance and who arguably was the second best team in the league. And that's understandable. But here's the thing, too. Remember when divisions were created for football? In fact, they were created for baseball in the ACC. The basketball coaches held off on those divisions. They just played it 1 through 14, now 1 through 12, 1 through 14, 1 through 15 as it stands now. The interesting part about football going to divisions is going to be kind of how it plays itself out. Also, how does it play itself out when you're playing 10 conference games, Mark? Remember we talked yesterday about the ACC and the SEC kind of having that perceived toehold on the college football playoff because of the 8 conference games? Those 10 games now, that's going to be very, very interesting as we move toward a new world of college football. Because when you go to 10, what does it look like? What's it mean? If you go without divisions, you rotate quicker through the league. There may be more value in a 10-game no division ACC, but we've got a one-year look at it potentially if we can get through a full calendar.
Well, I like it on the surface, but let me just say this, not to put a damper on the party, because I'm telling you, yesterday afternoon at 4:30 when all this broke, people were going crazy on the radio show. I mean, just left and right and speculation. It's really the first time we've had, as I said, meat on the bone in a long, long time, and people are so hungry and thirsty for sports that even a story like this yesterday breaking with Notre Dame being in the league for football, and here are some schedules that have been tweaked and so forth, people are going crazy for it. So I'll just say this, not to put a damper on the party, and this is true whether it's an ACC announcement, Big Ten, Pac-12, Big 12, SEC, anybody else. Anything can be announced, but we still have work to do to get to the week of September 7th. And I'm not trying to put a damper on the party, but there's no guarantee, Wes, that, hey, we're just going to flip the switch and, man, we're good to go September 7th. Let's go kick it off. I hope we do. I really do. I pray that we do. But we still have a lot of work to do. And, I read a story yesterday where Dr. Fauci's talking about states like Tennessee, Kentucky, Indiana, and Ohio have a lot of work to do because they're now hotspots. This is an ongoing, as you said, fluid, fake left, go right scenario. But we still all have a lot to do to flatten this curve so we can enjoy college football and all the sports coming up hopefully this fall.
Yep, the commissioner of the ACC, John Swofford, did have a statement on the back end. And again, I'll point to the collaborative effort across the board of the institutions in this league that got this project completed yesterday. Quote, today's decision was made after months of thoughtful planning by numerous individuals throughout the conference. The board's decision presents a path, if public health guidance allows, to move forward with competition. The commissioner went on to add that our institutions are committed to taking the necessary measures to facilitate the return in a safe and responsible manner. We recognize we may need to be nimble and make adjustments in the future, and we will be prepared as possible should that need arise. Okay, Mark, I want to go back to a couple of things here on the basis of the commissioner's quote. Number one, that COVID task force that had representatives from all 15 ACC member institutions worked collaboratively with the board of directors in formulating some of the guidelines. Now I want to take you to one of the clauses in the schedule that I think is really important to understand. The ACC, as we've talked about for a long time since coming back on the air regularly since early June, the ACC is challenged by the fact that it is a north-south conference geographically. One of the things that was not mentioned yesterday in the release, and kind of surprisingly so, is that these committees decided that if you had an institution that was within 250 miles approximately of another institution, you were going to play that school. Now, some schools, that doesn't quite work as well. But for the North Carolina schools and the Virginia schools, Clemson and Georgia Tech, it becomes a very, very integral part of kind of how that schedule got laid out. So that 250-mile radius becomes a very, very important piece in putting the plotting of the dots together for the schedule bracket yesterday. And I think that's something that we ought to keep in mind. The health and safety and the travel logistics involved, that's also why on the non-conference option, it either has to be a home game or it has to be an in-state opponent. I think those things are very, very important in kind of how we're dealing with 2020 from a health crisis perspective.
100% agree. And that's why I keep saying that as cool as the announcement is, and it's unbelievable to see Notre Dame after 1887 joining a conference for the first time in football. We've got to get to the starting point. And no matter what's announced, and if the SEC announces something today or the Big 12 tomorrow, whatever the case may be, great, awesome. Everybody can put their arms around it and cheer and go nuts. But, hey, we got work to do. And it's crunch time, man. It's August 1st on Saturday. So it just goes to show you how tight this is and practices starting up and so forth. So, but, again, not to put a damper on it, people are excited with the news yesterday, Wes. And, you know, I thought there were some winners and I thought there were some losers. Based on just the schedule and what your expectations are for certain teams. And I don't know if you've done this, but I came up with a list. I have a couple that I thought were winners. I had a couple that I thought were losers. And I had a couple that I thought had a tougher path. So I've got three different categories. I just messing around studying the schedule last night. And I'll give you what I think are the winners on this schedule, this reschedule, if you will. Again, this is on the assumption that we're going to play 10 plus 1. But I thought the winners were North Carolina and NC State. And the reason I say those two particular schools, for NC State, you eliminate Louisville, you don't have to play Clemson, and, you know, you don't have to play Notre Dame. And I think one of the things we've talked about with NC State leading into the offseason, into the season, opener at Louisville, here comes Mississippi State at home. And for a team that really struggled last year, trying to get out of the gate quickly, we emphasize those first two games. Hey, Louisville's gone. You don't have to worry about the Death Valley deal. And Notre Dame, you're the only team in the ACC that doesn't play Clemson or Notre Dame. So, you know, for NC State, people, hey, we can't have nice things. Well, you got a nice thing. That was called a gift, in my opinion, based on the way the schedule tweaks for the Wolfpack moving forward. The other winner, in my opinion, Wes, was North Carolina. And for the same kind of reasons. You know, when we talked to Mac Brown, he even kid around about the non-conference schedule. Man, we got to be ready to go. We got Auburn and UCF right out of the gate, not in that order, both away from Chapel Hill. Guess what? Those games are eliminated. And they don't play Pittsburgh. I keep telling you, Pitt's the sleeper in the Coastal. There was no Coastal for 2020. So North Carolina eliminated Central Florida on the road. Auburn and Atlanta don't play Pitt. They miss Clemson. They miss Louisville. And they get Notre Dame at home. I mean, if you're a Tar Heel fan, you're a Wolfpack fan, I thought yesterday was incredibly great news for you two. That's what I think.
I don't disagree with State and Carolina. I think they did win. The Wolfpack in particular, certainly no Clemson, no Louisville, and no Notre Dame, as you alluded to. I think for Jeff Hafley in Boston College, what was already a challenging first year got a little tougher, by the way, Pack. BC got dealt some high cards to have to stomach in year one. And again, I start looking at kind of the add, the drops, and the keeps. They added Georgia Tech, Pitt, Duke, Virginia, and Notre Dame. They dropped NC State, Florida State, Wake Forest, kept Syracuse, Virginia Tech, and Clemson. Now, by the way, the Clemson game, I think, was originally scheduled to be at Chestnut Hill. It's now been moved back to back-to-back trips to Frank Howard Field this year. And by the way, Syracuse was supposed to be a home game, and now that's a road game. telling you, man, sometimes it's in the dirt's in the details, and the steep hill just got a little steeper for Jeff Hafley, I think, in year one.
Yeah, they were one on my loser list. Again, it doesn't mean you can't go out and win games. We're just saying, just from a pure schedule optics standpoint, good, bad, or indifferent. But you start talking about new coach, playing catch-up anyhow with no spring games and all that great stuff, and you've got at Clemson, at Virginia Tech, at Virginia, and you still get to play Louisville, North Carolina, Notre Dame, and Pitt at home. That is a beast. I don't care who you are. That is, grab your lunch money and your lunch pail and get to work, because that is going to be a difficult ride for the Eagles.
All right. When we come back on Packer and Durham, the schedule was the biggest news of the day. The next biggest news, the first opt-out in college football comes from the ACC. A major, major talent elects to bypass a final year at Virginia Tech. Caleb Farley opts out to prepare for the NFL draft. A big loss for the Hokies in the secondary on the day the schedule's released. Back after this on ACC Network.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, Thursday, 844-SAY-ACCN. Big news yesterday, Notre Dame's in the league for football. It's 2020, man. What do you want me to tell you? Took a pandemic, but they're in the league for football, Wes. Can't believe Notre Dame's in the conference in football. The world's crazy. It's nuts. All right, we're going to get back to more winners and losers from the schedule standpoint.
I cannot wait. Can I just say that I am very excited for the official Packer and Durham apology to be issued in person to Roddy Jones on his next appearance on this show?
I already gave it to him 2 minutes into the show. I mean, I don't know what else you want me to do.
I know you did, but okay. Well, when Roddy's on the show...
Oh, I'll do whatever you want.
No, it's fine. You're good, but he will accept the apology. Yeah.
Well, actually, he has already texted me and said, you don't need to apologize. I said, well, yeah, I do. I said, because you came on the show, and we're talking all this Notre Dame, how cool would it be if they were in the league? And I'm like, well, they're not in the league. Well, Pack, how about if we had Notre Dame in the ACC championship? Right. And I was like, are you nuts? You crazy? You can't have a team that's not a member of the conference playing for a championship. And that's how this whole thing got started. And so I'm giving him all the props in the world. He was right. I was wrong. And, it's again, like I said, I thought that was the biggest story of the day yesterday, that Notre Dame had committed. And again, it's got to be a give and take here. I mean, we talked about partnerships for how long on this whole subject with Notre Dame. You know, they're coming off the hip with their NBC money. They're now going to be able to share in the big pot of whatever it's generated. They can win a conference championship. If they don't, they still have a chance to get to the Orange Bowl and take that spot. So, I mean, it's all give and take. And you know what? If you don't like that whole deal, here's an idea. Go win your games, right? I mean, I don't care who you are. You got a chance to get to the ACC championship game if you win your games. There's no more complaints about, well, we're in the Atlantic, we can't do this because of Clemson, or, hey, the Coastal's done this. I don't want to hear about it. Man, here's the schedule. Yeah, hopefully we play 10 plus one. Go win them, man. You win them, you get to Charlotte, got a chance to do big things. And that's where we are. So, the fact that Notre Dame's in a conference for the first time ever since 1887, huge news. And I do think, too, real quick before we get this Farley story, I think subtly, underneath that headline, and it's only going to get more momentum, was John Swofford's maneuvering of the plus one. The plus one is a very subtle, people aren't talking about it yet because Notre Dame is such a big story, but the plus one move that the ACC made yesterday was really smart. And if it turns out that the plus one games don't take place, hey, so be it. But the ACC got out in front of the parade, set the bar, set the standard, and now if anybody else is man enough to step up and take the challenge, great. But if you don't, you're on record for saying, you know what, we don't want any piece of it. And I thought that was an incredibly smart, the way it was worded was perfect, quite frankly. And John Swofford and all the movers and shakers in the league, really, I mean, that was clever and I'm not saying it was devious, because it's not devious. It's right there in front of you. Take it or leave it. But that move will come back to be a story, I think, in due time, Wes.
You're right about that, and I'm looking forward to seeing where that plus one goes, not just on the obvious ACC-SEC matchups, but also with schools that don't have that natural tie that have to meet those stipulations of either being in-state or a home game. The player story of yesterday concerning college football also developed in the afternoon, and in fact, it was Caleb Farley of Virginia Tech that took to social media and released this statement.
After much consideration with my family, I have decided to opt out of the 2020 college football season and began preparing for the 2021 NFL draft. I am opting out due to uncertain health conditions and regulations and all the other opt-outs going on in football right now. I tragically lost my mother, Robin, January 2nd, 2018, to an illness, and I cannot afford to lose another parent or loved one. Though the competitor in me badly wants to play this season, I cannot ignore what's going on in my heart, and I must make the decision that brings me the most peace. So thank you, Virginia Tech, my coaches, teammates, and anyone else who has supported me in the past. I wish you all the best, and stay safe, and God bless.
Respect his opinion, Wes. I mean,
all right,
he's doing
what's Caleb Farley yesterday in a statement.
He's doing what is in his best interest. And you know what? From a selfish standpoint, I wish he would stay at Virginia Tech because I love watching him play. But you know what? He's doing what he's got to do, and you got to respect that. And I know Hokie Nation's like, oh, man, come on, Caleb, we got you for 2020. Let's go. I get all that. But, man, in this situation, and he just explained it to you, family first, man, you do what you got to do. So good for him. I hope he has a great NFL career.
It's a tough loss for the secondary of Virginia Tech because he's a talented player, led the ACC last year in passes defended with 16. You look at some of the metrics on him, he's one of the outstanding players. Lowest completion percentage allowed last year in FBS among defensive backs. He's projected first-round guy. Now, here's the add-on to this story. You see the list now. These are the best DBs in college football a season ago who are returning. Caleb Farley, Vince Gray at Michigan, Trayvon Diggs at Alabama, and Damari Mathis, of course, at Pittsburgh, who with Paris Ford headlines the Panthers secondary. The thing about Farley is it's an impact loss for Virginia Tech. But, Pack, as he said in the statement, others that have opted out, well, the others that have opted out all play in the league where they pay you, the National Football League. And that list is getting long. It's starting to add on every day. In fact, three or four more guys yesterday elected to opt out of the 2020 NFL season. In Farley's case, he becomes the headline player, at least in college football for the time being, to opt out. Mark, it begs the question, and it's a road that I'm not sure we ever thought we would go down. Are we going to see college players opt out of the season as we draw closer to the start of fall practice, much like we've seen in the National Football League? And when you think about it, here's just a defensive list of player, and we've talked about this, the defensive side in the Atlantic Coast Conference and the quarterback play in the ACC is going to be at a higher level than it was a year ago. This is just a list of PFF's 2021 draft big board in the ACC on the defensive side, Mark. And Farley's already opted out. And I mean, let's be honest. Marvin Wilson, would he be a candidate? We thought he was a first-rounder last spring.
Yeah, Caleb's a first-round pick. And so, like I said, you do what you have to do. And if it turns out more college players, as we get closer to what we hope is the start of the season, say, hey, you know what, I'm just not comfortable playing. Hey, like I said, you do what you have to do, Wes. And this is a highly unusual year in every sense of the word. So again, you respect somebody's decision and you hope they have a great, great career. And, you know, I will say this, today is Justin Fuente's birthday. And I'm sure Coach got out of bed this morning and went, man, I really wish we had Farley for one more year. But you know, again, you understand what people have to do to take care of their family. And if you're a projected first-round pick, and he mentioned his mom passing away in 2018 with illnesses, and you've got to take care of your elders, I mean, I get it. I mean, I totally understand it. I don't like it from a selfish standpoint as a fan, but I absolutely respect all these student-athletes that just go, hey, you know what, I'm just not comfortable participating given the current situation. So, again, you wish them the best, and down the road you go.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting time for sure. We wish Caleb Farley the very best, and certainly Virginia Tech as they get ready to start their workouts and practices in preparation for this brand new released 2020 schedule that the Hokies are going to take on starting the second week in September. The Florida State takeover is underway today. Coming up on the show, we're going to visit with basketball player Malik Osborne, longtime Seminole assistant coach Odell Hagans. Danny Cannell is one of two quarterbacks that will join us. But when we come back, the two-sport legend from Thomasville, Georgia, Heisman Trophy winner Charlie Ward is next on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. The Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham. It's a Florida State takeover. Today on the program, as Wes pointed out, some really great guests for coming up here in the next hour and a half and change. Again, numbers 844-SAY-ACCN. But Wes, let's lead off with a guy that was a great football player, a great basketball player, and on top of that, an even better person for what he stands for and what he does, giving back to his community, teaching and everything else. Mm-hmm. This guy's just pure class, and you can't do a Florida State takeover without talking to Charlie Ward, and he joins us now. Charlie, first of all, we really appreciate the time. And again, every time I've had a conversation with you, I've always come away impressed by going, you know what, that's the way you're supposed to conduct yourself. You are a true Florida State guy in every sense of the word. And I just want to congratulate you on all of the stuff that not only did you accomplish, but what you're doing, giving back to the community.
Well, I definitely appreciate you guys having me on. I'm still trying to figure out how I made Packer and Durham, but because I listen to you guys sometimes I'm on the road, but I'm definitely grateful for the opportunity to be on. And you know, my parents taught me well. You know, they were advocates in the community, educators, and my dad was a coach. And so, you know, I had great life lessons or great mentors in my parents. And being able to give back, because someone gave to me so that I can have this opportunity to be who I am today. And so it's just my obligation to be able to help others, hopefully, you know, achieve their goals as well.
Charlie, it's not only an amazing athletic journey, now it's an amazing coaching journey for you. I mean, for all the success at the college level and certainly in pro basketball, this coaching thing, I know, has meant a lot to you, because seemingly there's been an opportunity for you to help young people and make an impact along the way, and now you're back in Tallahassee doing it.
Yes. I got an opportunity to coach about 9 years ago. Became a head football coach, and some people may say I wasn't successful as a coach because of my record, which record-wise I was not. But I'm grateful that I was in an environment where it wasn't all about, you know, wins and losses. It was about building young people up and helping them achieve their goals. And so I was grateful to be in that environment. And, you know, I didn't do well as a football coach, but the last 2 years down here at Florida High in Tallahassee, I've been blessed to have some great talent, some great support from administration and the parents. And we've had two great seasons. You know, we haven't won a championship, but we've made some great strides in doing that. So for the longest time, I thought I was a failure as a coach. And I was just I'm just finding out now that I was probably coaching the wrong sport. Once I started coaching basketball, things have seemed to change. So I think I'm going to stick with basketball.
Charlie, there's no failure when you have an impact on young people's lives. I mean, I don't even care about wins and losses. That's all icing on the cake. When you can look in some kid's eyes and you know you get that connection and make a difference, that's what it's all about. You know, you had great success in multiple sports at Florida State, but I'd be remiss from a coaching perspective if I didn't ask you about the impact Bobby Bowden had on you, not only from a professional standpoint, but even more importantly, what you're doing right now.
Well, when I got into coaching, especially at the high school level, you know, I gave him a call when I was trying to figure this football thing out, because I was out of football for about 13 years, you know, with my NBA career. And I gave him a call and asked him, you know, what are two things that I need to know about being a head coach? And he gave me these two things. He said, be fair and be honest. And he definitely lived those things. You know, I was grateful to have an opportunity to be around him for 5 years, you know, physically around him, seeing who he is and the things that he stood for. And a lot of those things have rubbed off on me as a coach. And, of course, I had my dad early on and some other great coaches that helped impact my life. But Coach Bowden was a man of integrity, and that was one of the reasons why I chose Florida State. And he was fair. He told me that if I was going to play quarterback, that I was going to have to wait my turn. And what he didn't tell me was that I was going to have to be the punter my freshman year. but I figured out, you know, later on that, you know, that was part of God's plan for my journey in college. And it actually worked out for me because, you know, I had 5 years in college. And four of those years, again, I played basketball. And those 4 years definitely gave me an opportunity to be able to have the NBA as an option. And the first year being a punter was a blessing in disguise in a lot of ways, because if I would have played basketball my freshman year, true freshman year, I wouldn't have been able to play my senior year, redshirt senior year. So sometimes, you know, we look at those opportunities as a disruption, because I didn't go to school to be the punter, but God definitely had a bigger plan.
Yeah.
Charlie, when you think about all the things that kind of happened in your athletic journey, I got to believe that one of the silver linings happened at halftime in Atlanta when you guys started going to the fast break. Because not only did it showcase what you were about, it also just turned on the valve really to change football. I mean, when you think about college football and dynamic operations in game planning, when you guys went to the fast break at halftime at Grant Field that day in Atlanta, it changed just about every offensive mentality the modern college game has.
Well, actually, I was a part of the reason why we had to go to that offense, because I had thrown like two interceptions early on in the game. And, you know, that was during my time where I was trying to figure out which color jersey to throw the ball to. When it was all said and done, actually, that offense was our two-minute offense. And at that time, in the fourth quarter, we needed something fast. And we were able to go to that fast break offense. But the crazy part about it is that game at Georgia Tech, we literally ran three plays the entire fourth quarter when we were down like 17 points or whatever it was. And so it changed. We had it in our arsenal. But it definitely changed our thought processes moving forward. And it continued to evolve over the course of the year. And then our senior year, we became, you know, efficient at doing the things that we were very good at. And so I just think, you know, during the course of that year, for me, it was big experience. A lot of experience was missing and lacking. So that's where I was making a lot of mistakes. But once I figured out that if I throw the ball to my guys, we can have great success. And so that was a big part in, you know, the turnaround as well. Just being able to lead our guys and do the things necessary that we have been practicing for quite some time. But it definitely did change the landscape or the thought process. And we got it from the Buffalo Bills. Jim Kelly was running the fast break type offense. And that's kind of where we got our offense from. But it didn't get rolled out until the Georgia Tech game.
Charlie, as far as Florida State football today, because Leonard's got it going on in hoops, I don't got to bother you with that, but we got to get Florida State football back to that elite status. What needs to happen from your perspective now as a fan as a former famous alum, when you watch the Noles, what needs to happen for Florida State to get back to where they want to be?
Well, one of the biggest issues we've had is just, and I've talked about this a lot when I'm doing my IG live shows or just talk speaking in general. If any organization wants to be successful, they have to have everyone aligned properly. And so from the president down to the AD, down to the head coach, if there's any kind of miscommunication, dissension, not all on the same page, you're going to have some issues. And also instability, you know, not having a coach in place for quite some time or not being there fully, and mostly sometimes in our case. I just think now with Coach Norvell being here, that is who administration wanted, and they got him. And I think he has all the things needed to be successful. As we've seen so far, you know, he's helped turn around the roster. There's some guys who weren't on board with the things that he wanted to do as far as their standards, and they're no longer here. And the guys that are here, he had two guys, key guys, come back this year, Marvin Wilson and Tyrod Terry decided to come back. Hopefully they play, but they decided to come back, which was a great shot in the arm because that was one of the things that I know when I was coming through Florida State, we had great senior leadership, guys that taught us the way. And so I think Marvin and Tyrod want to do the same, to be able to leave a legacy and also help the young guys come along. And so I just think we do have all those things in place right now. Coach Norvell will do a great job this year. He's already made some great strides in just the discipline, the guys buying into the philosophies that they're wanting and teaching. And that's the beginning of, you know, something great. When you have a leader and everyone's bought in, even the outside kind of bought in as well. And my whole plight has always been, let's support whoever administration put in the head coaching spot. Let's support those guys. And if it's not meant to be, it's not meant to be. But while they're here, they're Seminoles, and let's support them. And I think we have a guy now that I think the majority of the people will be able to support. And as we all know, when you have the proper support, you can do great things. And we do have some talent as well.
No doubt.
All right. Well, I tell you what a treat for us to have Charlie Ward with us this morning on Packer and Durham. Charlie, we wish you all the best. And thanks again for spending time with us this morning.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on. And I'll continue to listen to your show. And you do a great job. And hopefully we can get a great ACC season this year.
Amen to that. Amen to that.
Absolutely right.
What a great player.
Appreciate it very much. The great Charlie Ward, no question. Yep, unbelievable guy and a real treat to have visit with us. When we come back, another Seminole quarterback stops by. Danny Cannell joins Packer in Durham, but we're going to turn this one around pretty quick. Just a 90-second break, and we'll come back with the 1995 ACC Player of the Year right after this.
The Packer in Durham Podcast. This is the Packer in Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham show continues on this Thursday. 844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the program. And we continue a plethora of debuts, not only on today's show, but really the last couple weeks. And that includes a guy that's fresh off the beach. Always looks like $1 million. Man, feeling good about his Noles. Danny Cannell on a Florida State takeover day. Danny, how are you, man?
I am fantastic, fellas. Good morning. I want to point something out to you. I brought this helmet here for my little makeshift set, okay? And yep. You guys know they have tomahawks, right? That's what they give out at Florida State as awards. But did you know that they gave them out for academics? Do you see that right there? It says academics right there. I was a student athlete, fellas. I just want you to know that. Student athlete.
Well, first of all, before Wes jumps in on this thing, let me just say one thing. I know you just made those up or had your girls do it because the word academics was misspelled on your helmet. So I know better than that.
That wasn't my fault then. That was the equipment manager's. That wasn't me.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Hey Danny, here's the question I've got, because I mean, you know, certainly we all remember you played at Florida State. I mean, I was doing Falcons preseason when you broke your finger in Jacksonville that night playing for Dan Reeves. I was doing radio that night. But now I'm starting to wonder, looking at your social media account, if your daughter's not the best golfer in the family.
She might be. She's starting to beat me. I'll tell you, my finger still is a little bit crooked. This is this ring finger right there. That's the ring from that game that you were calling in Jacksonville when I was on the Falcons. But it's never left me. I never got it fixed. But, yeah, you're right. And there's a formula I have. I don't know if you guys would agree with this. When you – like, I used to be a scratch golfer when I didn't have kids, when I wasn't married. As soon as I got married and had kids, right, my handicap went up. So there's a formula for every child you have. It's two shots added to your handicap. So I have three kids. Now I'm like a six. And if I hopefully I don't have any more kids, it'll just keep going up. It's just there's not enough time in the day. So now my daughter's playing all the time. She's beating me. Now my youngest has started to challenge me too. So, yeah, my confidence in my golf game is just trending the wrong way.
Danny, I hate to break the news to you. As you get older, it doesn't become the number of kids. It becomes the number of hours you work each day, and you multiply your handicap by 15. And eventually you just go, you know what? I'm not going to hit a bad shot for 23 years. You'll eventually catch up to where I am right now. But nevertheless, big news yesterday regarding the ACC and this football schedule. Notre Dame now a conference member. I can't believe I am saying it, but I am. The Irish are in, and all of a sudden we've got one division, and let the games begin. And I guess that becomes the million-dollar question. Will the games begin?
Well, first let me respond to the ACC news yesterday, because I think it's fantastic news. I love the fact. I mean, I've been pushing for 10, 15 years. I know you have too, Pac. I'm sure Wes has. Notre Dame, just do it. Just join the ACC full-time. It's always seemed like a good fit. Since they've been this pseudo member in all other sports and kind of with one foot in the door in football, it's been like a pretty good fit. It's a pretty good marriage, but I think both sides could benefit if the Notre Dame would just go all in to the ACC. So I know this is a one-year fix, but I hope maybe it gives Notre Dame a taste of what it's like and it becomes permanent. The other thing is the no divisions. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I'm sick of seeing Clemson play against – you know, some 7-5 Georgia Tech team or a Duke team that's 8-4. I'd rather see Clemson play against the next best team, even if it means they have to beat an opponent twice. So I think doing away with divisions this season is an outstanding opportunity that might become permanent as well once you start to experiment with it and see what it looks like. Then as far as the follow-up to, well, does we even have football? Man, I mean, I am an optimistic person. I try to be, you know, keep – you know, confidence and be like, hey, we're going to do this. And it's been a roller coaster. And you guys know this, you know, back in March, it was like, no way. Then you get to April, May, things start open up. I'm in Florida. Everybody's feeling good. I'm like, man, we're going to definitely have college football. Then, of course, we have the setback. All of a sudden, cases are on the rise in the Sun Belt. It's like, uh-oh, here we go again. I'm more on the optimistic. I'm kind of on the up and up, especially when I see Major League Baseball has an outbreak that's pretty significant, right? Half a team in the Miami Marlins tested positive. Did they shut down? No, not yet. Now, I'm watching the Phillies, the team they play, to see if they have outbreaks. But if baseball can manage this and withstand a rough patch where they have some positive cases and kind of get through it, then I'm like, man, maybe college football can pull this off. But I'll tell you what scares me the most, it's not players catching COVID-19 from playing on the field, it's off the field. It's what decisions are they going to make when they are college students, when they want to get in, when they're invited to a party on campus like we saw at Rutgers? Do they make the mature decision? If I was a head coach, that would terrify me way more than players catching COVID-19 on the field.
Danny, it's interesting you bring that up, because yesterday I was asked about, you know, does it concern you that football players will be able to handle the general population of students coming back to campus? and what happens if the students don't come back? And I said, well, if the students don't come back and the football players are basically together, that might be the best thing for football. If you get the general population back, boy, a coach is really going to have to lean on the discipline and maturity of his team. In fact, I heard some NFL guys talk about that yesterday as being an integral part of whether the NFL season will succeed or not.
Totally agree, Wes. And you know, if you're a coach, we've seen coaches implement different rules, and they're not really, you know, applauded. Like, a lot of teams won't let their players have social media. That was probably 5 or 6 years ago. Now it has to be a team decision because a coach can't impose his will too much on the unpaid student athlete. If I was a coach, I would seriously consider putting my team on a curfew, and the players would hate it. That's the problem. But you've got to take some measures to ensure that your season is protected. And if that's not much fun for a player, I would tell the player, hey, do you want to play football? Do you want to complete a season and maybe achieve your goal of getting to the NFL? Or do you want to, you know, have a good time at college and put that entire, everything you've worked for your entire life, do you want to put that in jeopardy because of one opportunity or a couple opportunities to go to a fraternity or a sorority party or a house party, whatever type of issue they might run into? That's a tough call to make. And I say this from the point of, I was young and dumb when I was 18, 19, 20, when I was in college, and even when I was in the NFL, I would have made selfish, immature decisions, especially when I was a freshman and just wanted to cut loose. I knew I wasn't going to play. I was like, hey, I'm not, that would concern me because there'll be some members of the team that'll make, you know, hopefully it's your veterans, your juniors and seniors that'll make the best decisions. But there's going to be some knuckleheads on every team. How do you rein those guys in? And I'm telling you, this is going to be every coach's worst nightmare. And even if you did implement a curfew, it's really hard to monitor it because they don't have, you know, student athlete, dorms now where you can keep them all in one spot. So that's my biggest concern. I think it's every coach's biggest concern, too. And there's got to be some discipline and some ownership from the players themselves if we're going to pull this off.
Danny, it is a Florida State takeover today on the show. So let me get you back to Tallahassee. You are a proud Knoll, needless to say. You want to see this program get back to the glory days. Defensively, they've got a lot of pieces in place to be really kind of a dynamic team on that side. But you're a quarterback, right? And, you know, that offensive line's got to be good. And really the last couple years, that's been the bugaboo. Mike Norvell comes in, takes over. When you do inventory of the 2020 version of Florida State, and we're going to talk now assuming we're having the season, what do you see in Tallahassee?
I see optimism. I see a completely different atmosphere, a completely different mindset. But as you mentioned, Pack, the issues are still there. I mean, this offensive line has to play better, and they've recruited toward it. And at some point, you got to hope that there's going to be improvement. There has to be. I mean, it can't get much worse than it's been the last 2 years. So you would hope that's the case. Because I look at this team, I don't think they're that far off from competing and being a good ACC team. Now, I'm not saying they're going to take down Clemson, but I think 9 wins is a very reasonable expectation, a lofty goal for them. I think 8 wins is probably more realistic, and I think 7 wins would be unacceptable, you know, for what the talent they have. But if they can get offensive line play, which you would hope would mean better quarterback play, if the quarterback has more competition, there clearly is plenty of talent on that roster to contend with most, or not contend, to be significantly better than a lot of the teams they're going to compete against in the ACC. So I think the opportunity for a turnaround is there. But what concerns me probably the most, guys, is the fact that this, you know, the pandemic shortened offseason, no spring practice, you know, shortened offseason, training camp's going to be different. You're not going to have the similar type of time that you would as a new coach to implement your new scheme, your new techniques, all the things that are concerning. So it's one of these things I'm watching and hoping that some of the athletic talent can take over. But some of the mistakes are very fixable.
Danny, you played with great players in Tallahassee. I mean, just a cavalcade of guys on both sides of the ball. If I had to pick out a guy right now at Florida State that I think is a surefire lock in round one next year, it's Marvin Wilson. In fact, I think he'd be a round one guy this year. Is that the kind of, I mean, he's shown incredible leadership. The thing that sticks out about me is, to me, is not just his ability. The guy is now leading that football team as a whole. And I think that counts for something this fall too for Coach Norvell.
Absolutely. Because when you're a new coach and when there's been such a void in leadership, I mean, a lot of these guys have had four head coaches, if you count Odell Higgins, from Jimbo Fisher to Willie Taggart. Now Mike Norvell is their fourth. So it's hard for players to trust a coach or a new staff. But you know who they look to when there's a void in leadership? They look to their teammates. And that's where Marvin Wilson has stepped up to fill that void. He's an incredible talent. I love his presence on the field. He's an impact player that's a completely, you know, it's a difference maker on the field. And you saw, I think you saw his leadership with, you know, the issue that cropped up with, you know, when the Black Lives Matter movement was really, you know, at full tilt, and there was the issue between him and Mike Norvell. And Mike Norvell, and I thought Mike Norvell handled this really well. He let Marvin Wilson talk. He let him be that leader that he is. And I think that built a bond early on in this relationship that could really work well for both the players and the coaches. But I tell you what, guys, I follow Marvin Wilson on Instagram. I follow him on social media. With the news of what we saw yesterday with Virginia Tech's Caleb Farley, when you see a guy that's projected as a first round, when you see somebody who's most likely going to be an NFL draft pick, I get nervous, say, man, is he going to stick around for all this uncertainty when, man, that NFL is waiting for him. He's already done enough on tape. So that's a very real concern of mine. Everybody player has to make their personal decision. But if you lose that leadership that was just, you know, talking about, again, there's another void that has to be filled.
All right, Danny, you led off this interview bragging about academics being on that old helmet. By the way, I do like the gold BB helmet as opposed to the ones they've got now. Just saying. But right. Nevertheless.
Classic.
Right. All-time greats. You know, we always ask student-athletes this question, but I'm going to ask it to you since you started off with academics. What was the hardest class you had at Florida State?
So, I don't know if you guys know this. I was a pre-med major. My dad's an orthopedic surgeon, and my goal was to be a doctor like my dad. And then sports happened. You know, I get drafted in baseball. I'm starting to get some love in football. But when I went to Florida State, I was playing two sports. I went there, played baseball and football, and I was pre-med. So my schedule, as you can imagine, was pretty full. And like some of these guys that, you know, are very focused, come in with that mindset, and they get their degree early, they leave with a master's, or they start working towards some sort of graduate degree because they're focused. Let's just say I wasn't focused. I wanted to enjoy my collegiate experience in Tallahassee. So I took chemistry, the regular chemistry, which is a pre-med requirement. And I barely made it through that. There's a chemistry lab that was 3 hours. And I made it through. My dad was like, just keep plugging away. You'll be able to do it. Then my sophomore year, still pre-med, I got into organic chemistry. And organic chemistry destroyed me. It blew away any hopes and dreams of one day following my dad's footsteps. I called my dad. I'm like, I can't do this. I'm like, this is too ridiculous. And he's like, all right. So at that moment, I was like, what's the fastest way to get my degree? And that's why I have a marketing degree from Florida State in business.
There you go. Again, smart man. I like that whole answer. You tied it in perfectly from start to finish. I love it.
Yep.
Hey, Danny, thanks so much for spending time with us. Really appreciate it. Continued best wishes to you and your family. Thanks for being a part of the Florida State Takeover.
Appreciate it, guys. Fingers crossed we get some football. Let's go.
Always a joy. Danny Cannell got the fever. And he's right about the whole BB helmet, too. I'm just telling you, Florida State, from a marketing perspective, just saying, got incredible unis. But, Wes, the old school gold helmets, man, those things at night, when the Noles would come out, man, they would glisten. They were awesome. Love those things.
Did you ever think the gold color just kind of got changed?
It did.
You know, in the color chart pack, Pantone chart or whatever they call that thing?
Yeah, I mean, Florida State's gold helmet now is kind of muted. And you know, they still got great-looking unis, but when they had the Danny Cannell era, Charlie Ward, those gold Notre Dame-like BB helmets with the spear, man, those were awesome. Love those.
Yeah. I got an idea. Why don't you put that on Odell Higgins, who starts the second hour of this program when we come back. One of our all-time favorite guests on this show. We will talk to Coach Odell. It's only right on Florida State Takeover. We have one of the great Seminoles of all time. Player, coach, leader. Odell Higgins next with Packer and Durham on an FSU Takeover.
Packer and Durham.